On this season finale of Chronicle, we bring to a close a season that saw us branch out from the previous format, inviting guests on to discuss European horror movies that they selected. A format which I will say I enjoyed greatly. Now yes, it has been inconsistent, and the last couple of episodes have seen a drop off of guests due to a myriad of different reasons. However, the format as a whole has worked in such a way that when we return with our brand new series, we will be bringing guests back, but we'll be developing even further with us picking themes similar to the first three seasons of Chronicle and bringing your guests in with their picks that fall within those subgenres in European horror cinema. Now, this is a re-recorded intro for a previously recorded episode. This episode was recorded about a week ago, and it was, as I mentioned on the previous episode, a chance for me to pick a movie which I have kind of discussed before, but never in any full-on great detail, in a capacity which allowed me to further display my interest in a modern horror movie from Europe. The movie I selected was Knife Plus Heart from 2018, a French neo-giallo thriller slash horror movie, probably more in the thriller than the horror movie, like all the best gialli are. Now, the reason I've re-recorded this introduction is during the recording of the episode, I made several references to William Friedkin, who needs no introduction, but the comparison from Knife Plus Heart back to Friedkin primarily lands in the influence of his movie Cruising, specifically on this. And that's not just because it has a leather-bound killer who is killing gay people in a manner which does evoke Cruising, but rather it kind of went beyond that in himself, William Friedkin was doing something that at the time felt relatively transgressive. And I think Knife Plus Heart also is weirdly transgressive, even though as a society as a whole, we like to think that our attitudes have progressed quite some distance towards LGBTQ, not only in social aspects, but also in cinema. With those comments made on the recording, I felt it was prescient at this time, considering the actual day that this episode was planned to drop, that we acknowledge that earlier on today we found out that William Friedkin had passed away at the age of 82. Friedkin is a director who looms large over my love of cinema, and if you have had the chance, about 2 years ago, myself, Doug Tilley, and Bo Ransdell on the podcast Under the Stairs dedicated a full director's conversation discussing his entire back catalogue of the time, even though there's no planned future release this year of his final movie. But we did cover everything that William Friedkin had done, including Cruising, of which there is a great conversation. I actually discussed Cruising with Dave Parker as well on his podcast. But we covered in great detail the works of William Friedkin, in which I espouse my love of his work in cinema. So, yeah, I just wanted to note that at the start of this episode without derailing the conversation that came afterwards, and without releasing it and you, the listener, being confused as to why I did not acknowledge it. Rather than re-record the entire episode from scratch, I thought I would just put a small introduction in at the beginning. So, yeah, this is the final episode of Chronicle Season 4, a season that saw us try something a little bit different, and we will continue to modify and mould our approach in ways which interest me and hopefully interest you. The last movie we'll be discussing on this season of Chronicle is Knife Plus Heart from 2018. Hi, I'm Duncan McLeish, and you're listening to Chronicle, an almanac of old world horrors.
Arrête de jouer, c'est fini pour de bon.
Je voudrais sentir ta peau une dernière fois, pour plus avoir peur quand je serai seule, dans la nuit.
Je pensais pas que c'était possible d'aimer autant, aussi longtemps. Tu dois m'aimer.
T'es à moi, Loïs.
À moi, à moi, à moi.
C'est
c'est un de ses amis qui a découvert le corps.
Carl venait de tourner dans un demi-film.
Quel genre de film exactement?
Oh, arrêtez votre charme. Fais pas le coup des types, ils sont pas renseignés.
Dans deux minutes, je veux tous à poil et regarde à vos plus raides que Giscard. On se soulage avec la main, on est à l'aise entre copains.
Oh! Coupé! Sur le plateau, il était du genre insatiable, les yeux illuminés, à la merci de ses partenaires comme possédés. Vous savez, quand on s'oublie avec l'autre, qu'on sait plus où on est, ça vous est jamais arrivé. Une forme d'amour en quelque sorte, puissant. Vorace. Sans limite.
C'était le dernier plan du tueur homo. Bravo.
Ignition. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Liftoff.
And welcome back to another episode of Chronicle Podcast. This is season 4, episode number 12. This is the season finale of our season 4. In this season, we tried something a little bit different. Previous seasons, the previous three, we picked a subgenre within European horror cinema, and I picked my juicy choice picks. The reason we navigated away from that was that I have another show on this feed called Where to Begin With, which kind of does the same, except it expands that out beyond the European horror cinema tag. So we tried that a little bit different. We had guests come on, and I've had, or should I say, I've been blessed with a plethora of voices that joined me this season to discuss European horror movies that they picked. Now, I've enjoyed it so much that I've decided the next season will be slightly shorter and we'll run shorter seasons, similar to what we did in the first three seasons, but we'll also pick the subgenre within European horror cinema, so a theme that might be a director, it might be a specific style of cinema, it might be an actor. And what we'll do is we'll extend that out to our guest hosts to pick their picks that fall within that, and then we'll come on and join me to discuss those movies. So yeah, Chronicle will be back, and it'll be almost like a Brundlefly version of the previous three seasons and this current one. So I just want to say right up top at the start here, thank you very much to all the guests that you heard featured on this season. Now, I did tease at the end of the previous episode that on this particular one, I was going to be all selfish. Now, you might think, Duncan, this is a show which you run, which is curated by you, and as a result of that, aren't you always just a little bit selfish? And I would agree, yeah. But because this season has predominantly been guest picks, I've decided to use the old stamp of authority right at the end of this episode, or should I say at the end of this season, and pick a movie that I'm just pushing in here. It's still European horror / thriller, and is one that I really want to talk about. It's a modern one as well, and I have discussed it before. I have discussed it tangentially on podcasts under the stairs on the main feed, and I've never actually done a proper like discussion in-depth review, and this is the perfect time to do it. It's a movie that I think is brilliant. Every time I watch it, I think it's smarter It's visually more satisfying, and it's a movie that kind of stays with me after I watch it in the best possible way. And of course, above all else, because it's Chronicle, it's European. Let's talk a little bit on this episode about the movie Knife Plus Heart. This one is a French giallo thriller period piece sort of movie, and it is directed by a man called Yann Gonzalez. Yann has not done a ton of feature movies. In fact, this I think is his third feature. He's done a ton of shorts and has done some music video stuff for the French electronic group M83, who actually scored this movie. The Knife Plus Heart soundtrack is absolutely amazing, and it's beautiful and serene and touching and haunting and really well-tempered and measured, and it's the perfect accompaniment for this movie. But yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the cast here. We have Vanessa Paradis, Nicholas Murray, Kate Moran, Jonathan Gennett, Felix Marteau, Khaled Alouche, Noah Hernandez, Thibault Sauvier, Bertrand Mandico, Bastien Willer, Roman Boringer, Doreen Fall, and there are another couple of people in here. The synopsis for this one, and we're not going to spend a huge amount of time covering the synopsis here because I want to get into the wider discussion overall, is Paris, summer 1978. Anne is a producer of cheap gay porn. When Lois, her editor and companion, leaves her, she attempts to get her back by making a more ambitious film with the flamboyant Archibald. So, that really doesn't give away much of anything, and that's kind of great because we have stuff to talk about here. The movie itself, and I mention this kind of in the brief description of trying to pick a genre for this one, is it is a kind of Euro thriller by way of a giallo, and not only style. I think some people look at this one and see it specifically as, well, it's using all the neon lights and that makes it a giallo, which I know drives some purists up the wall. Visually speaking, it is, but there's more thematically going on here, and some of the tropes specifically that put it more in the realm of the giallo than just the, you know, the neon lighting effects that are used throughout the movie. But it's a movie that on a lot of levels actually is a surprisingly smart movie that takes a kind of queer and camp approach to delivering a thrilling subject matter whilst discussing higher concepts of the AIDS epidemic and its position and prominence in society, or lack thereof, when it comes to the due diligence and responsibility of people in authority to protect and or kind of recognise or acknowledge. So all that stuff's going on in the background. The beauty of the movie is, on its most base level, if you don't want to really be thinking about that, yes, you're missing a huge part of what this movie is actually doing, but you can watch this one as a kind of trashy Euro giallo horror, right? You can sit back and this movie perfectly works on that level, and we'll discuss that in a little second. On a higher level though, if you want to look at it from the aforementioned points, specifically about the lack of attention, credibility and care from authority figures in society, to specifically those of the alternative lifestyles that this movie portrays, then, you know, you can see that in here as well, and it's well catalogued, that specifically how the police actually behave in this movie are pretty fucking negligent, and that is me using nice words to describe, like, willful ignorance. by them as a whole, as an organisation. And that kind of cascades right throughout this entire movie. So you have that aspect as well. So let's cut down to the big level as to why I think this movie is absolutely brilliant. There is a ton of movies nowadays that are doing the quote-unquote giallo thing, right? It's become hugely popular. There's a lot of boutique labels that have re-released movies that you could only find in the worst rips possible before that, or terrible DVD releases from like 15 years ago. And through the release of those movies in better formats and more directors getting to see them, there's a lot of people taking a swing at doing a modern inspired giallo. The problem is that they get into some of the trappings and not a lot of what makes those movies great. One of the great recent giallo inspired movies is a movie like Barbarian Sim Studio, which has none of the lighting of an Argento or a Bava at all. In fact, it's a movie that purposely doesn't show you a gloved killer, rather a gloved editor, but it doesn't show you any of that, but still very much a giallo, or a modern gialli inspired thing, depending once again how pure you want to go down the road of, well, it needs to be made in Italy, it needs to be like, etc, etc. It's not on that level, but you know, it's definitely a movie that is covering the feel of the giallo. I then look at a movie maybe like A Mare or The Strange Colour of Your Body's Tears, and those are movies that are more gregarious on the colour but still get the content, still get the idea and the effect of what a giallo is. If I look at a movie like Malignant, a recent one from James Wan, it's giallo inspired, but really in some of the setup, but it deviates quite far from it. So I think to say, oh, you know, it's James Wan's giallo is very short-sighted. I don't think it does credit to the genre of which it takes influence of, but does not fall within. So you have those aspects as well. Neon lighting does not a giallo make. It shows an influence, for sure, of a particular time period, but not necessarily in the setup and the story. In Knife Plus Heart, the killer is a mask killer, is a glove-wearing killer who is stabbing people intimately. There is, you know, this is driven a lot by a score and a repressed memory, which is kind of, you know, is delivered with an explanation at the end of the movie as to what caused it and what the trigger was and the motivation behind the killing. So all those things, classic giallo tropes. On top of that, the negligence of the police forces the filmmaker in this movie to begin her own investigation. These are classic giallo tropes. So, you know, the crime will be solved by someone other than law enforcement. Even as like a very giallo-esque ending where the police don't get their man and the law is taken into the hands of the you know, the survivors. So it falls very much in those camps. The deaths themselves are ostentatious affairs and set up with a great deal of cinematic prowess and flex. And so once again, very, very giallo. This one has all the style, but also has a lot of the substance as well. So it covers those. It's not a movie that necessarily goes gregarious with its gore, but it does have, you know, the blood and all the rest. The killer's weapon of choice here is a dildo which contains a switchblade within it, which he then uses to murder his victims. It's weird because I'm someone who is a big fan of the Friedkin movie Cruising. I remember when this came out, and I remember watching it the first time and thinking, I just got those Cruising vibes all the way through it. Cruising is a movie which, upon its release, received a lot of consternation and a lot of hate from the homosexual community at the time who saw this as a movie which maybe didn't understand, and I'm not best placed to have this conversation. Like, I'm a heterosexual male, so like I don't know. I'm a heterosexual male who was what, maybe 1 year old when Cruising came out, so like I can't speak for the time, I can't speak for the area, and I don't have the background. I will say that the movie over time has found an audience which is more forgiving of it and particular subcultures that it did portray. Yes, ultimately its message is a little bit problematic, but I put that down to a full lack of understanding from Friedkin himself, but a daring movie nonetheless. I would say it, you know, it pushed things out. What's really interesting about things in Knife Plus Heart is it's jumping back to that time frame, and it's examining from a point of view with a society which is more empowered and more for, I was going to say more forgiving. Forgiving's not even the right word, and that's bad. That's bad on me to say that, but is more understanding and more accepting of LGBTQ overall. And as a result of that, this movie I think has been received much better, but not in the way that I would have thought it would have been. I would have thought this one would have got a lot more press upon its release and a lot more people kind of shouting about it. It's really interesting. There's a movie called Stranger by the Lake, which is also a French movie, which is also a murder movie, which is also kind of set in a particular cruising spot for gay men, which I love. I think it's an absolutely phenomenal movie. And I remember when that one came out, and the places you would like to see a movie like that be sung loud about, like online, it kind of is, it's almost like it's a dirty word, or it's like a dirty movie that you don't want to talk about. And that could be because there is, you know, that there is graphic male nudity, but I think we're all adults, and if you can't get over that, then I don't know what to say about that. Grow up is probably where I would land. But yeah, like, to me, Knife Plus Heart felt like it should be a movie that had a lot more importance behind it. Like, specifically because the director, and this is leaning away to the giallo and more to the subtext I was talking about before, where they're using the subject matter and the delivery of this genre to have a kind of an interesting conversation about the view and attitude of specifically AIDS, if you're using that as a metaphor in this movie, upon the, you know, the sex industry surrounding homosexuality. Specifically about how the police look at it as quote-unquote icky. And, you know, like, as a result, don't take any of the murders as something they really should be investigating, almost as if like the deaths in the movie are a byproduct, an effect of the cause of having this lifestyle, which is kind of telling. But it's an attitude that still kind of weirdly exists. There is a serial killer who was only caught a couple of years ago in Canada called Bruce MacArthur, who had been cruising and killing multiple gay men for decades, with police being fully aware of it, with reporters reporting on it, with people in the community mentioning it and raising it again and again and again, and the kind of lackadaisical attitude of law enforcement of, ah, we'll get around to it, or, well, you know what those people that live that lifestyle are like. You only have to drag your attention back to Jeffrey Dahmer, who's obviously got a lot of press in the last 2 years because of the Netflix series, and a lot of outcry of the inaction of the police department. I wish that had been a little bit more vocal at the time when these things were mentioned. So the movie's kind of tackling that, and I think it's very brave to do that, but it's also a really smart point that they put on there. Generally, the police are, in giallo movies, inexplicably bad at their job. like genuinely bad at your job. And what I love about Knife Plus Heart is that it gives its justification for poor police work and the fact that they're not invested and they just don't care in the victims. And that's a clever trope. It's smart writing and it's contextualizing something that becomes a bit of a bugbear and makes a lot of these movies feel interchangeable in the 70s. It gives it real grounding. I think this has some great powerhouse performances. I mentioned before, I think the score by M83 is wonderful. Cinematography and the lighting are really, really good. You get some beautiful shots of not only those neon-drenched scenes, but also wonderful outside shots during the day. A lot of daylight as well. Like I said before, it reminded me of Friedkin's Cruisin', a movie that I genuinely, and I can't stress this enough, I think he is a great director for having made that movie, even if it did at the time, and maybe still to some critics, feel like a misstep for a director that had come off a incredibly powerful decade in the 70s with like very, 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 very minor missteps, if any, to come into a new decade and then swing out with that. What a weird time in cinema. You've Cruisin' and you have De Palma making movies like Dress to Kill, and it must have just seemed like Hollywood just didn't understand anything about anything, and these directors also didn't understand anything about anything. Also, weirdly, at times reminds me of, for those that are interested in kind of Italian directors of this genre and slightly adjacent, there is I would class it as more of a slasher with giallo tropes, even though it is an Italian production movie by an Italian director. But some of Fulci's 80s work, specifically stuff set in America, like A Manhattan Baby, for example, but specifically New York Ripper. New York Ripper would pair really well in a trio of movies with Knife Plus Heart and Cruisin'. I think those three movies are all versions of a similar baseline story, telling their own stories through different ways and really, really interesting ways as well. At times, Knife Plus Heart has a bit of a grimy feel to it that, to me, is evoked more prominently in New York Ripper. So I think it would work very well with it. Ultimately, Knife Plus Heart, I think, is a movie that will continually find its audience. I think when we reach 2028 and the movie's a decade old, I think its appreciation and its impact will be a bit more prominent. Just like Cruisin' found its audience much later on, and a movie like New York Ripper continues to find its audience generally through people going, that, why is this movie just make me feel dirty when I watch it? I think it's a great movie, and if you haven't seen it, I've tried my best to avoid specific plot points and details. Suffice to say that I think the story itself is great. I think the reveal is awesome. I think if you like 70s and early 80s giallo, you're kind of Italian or even to an extent French or Spanish murder thrillers, it's got that in there. If you like the movie Cruisin', please watch this movie as well. But if you're just looking for something that is different, is off the beaten track, and is a great slab of modern day European horror slash thriller, Knife Plus Heart ticks a lot of boxes for me. So a wonderfully powerful bit of cinema, beautifully shot and beautifully scored. So yeah, this was the final movie that I wanted to discuss on this season of Chronicle. You're listening to Chronicle Podcast. Stay with us. And there you go, ladies and gents. You've been listening to Season 4 of Chronicle Podcast. This has been our season finale, episode number 12. We've been discussing the movie Knife Plus Heart. And this closes out a incredibly fun series for me. I've really enjoyed this one, and like I say, when we come back with season 5, the seasons will be shorter. They'll probably run between 4 to 6 episodes. That means you'll be getting a lot more of them, and the velocity in which they drop will have a better cadence for you as a listener, I know we've had a couple of drops off in this season, and that's primarily been because I've tried to book particular voices with particular movies, and those guests committed and then sadly couldn't make the recordings, and we tried to reshuffle things around, and then before you know it, a month and a half has passed. It doesn't make for happy listening from my point of view when podcasts do that, so I can only apologise and commit to better planning in the next season, where we'll be picking specific themes and having guests pick their movies and come on and chat with me. So keep your eyes peeled. Chronicle Season 5 will be returning early 2024. So thank you for all the support this year on this particular season. I'll be teasing some more interesting details on that much later in the year, probably November, December time. You'll be getting a little bit of a tease of not only what the theme is for season 5, the guests and the picks, and how you, more importantly, can take part in the seasons, because I want to make the episodes a bit more interactive for you guys out there. As always, please check out the other shows on this feed. If you're a purely a Chronicle listener, and I can get why you'd want to be, I'm doing a lot of interesting work on some of the other shows on this particular feed. Doing the Nasty season 2 is about 4 episodes away from the end, having completed a run of the tier 3 Video Nasties list. Myself and Mark Ball will be bringing that in to a final close and really putting a bow on Doing the Nasty. That show will become a archived show. I might even look to spin it out into its own separate archivable feed, given time, so people can go back and enjoy those episodes. So yeah, there's that. So that's available there. Opera Omnia, which is the show that I do that exclusively looks at a director's back catalogue. We have just finished season 4 there, looking at Alex Garland. Myself and JP from 22 Shots of Moods of Horror finished that. I've got a couple of addendum episodes to record over the summer, so I'll be sitting down with Richard Glenn Smith to finish out our Strickland series by looking at Flux Gourmet, his movie that he released last year. And then myself and Watson will be sitting down to do the final movies in the Ben Wheatley look, which will be The Meg 2, which I still have to see but has been getting a fucking punishing time right now on the critics. And we'll also be doing In the Earth, which was the previous Wheatley movie, concluding those ones out. Season number 5 has just been announced. Myself and Scott McKenzie from Scotland Liam vs. Evil and the Jaws of Shite and Other Regrettable Outbursts podcast will be joining me for a 10 movie run looking at Nicholas Winding Refn. That will be coming towards the end of this year and running into the middle of next year. So that's one that I'm very excited about. Love me some Winding Refn. And when you're talking about those giallo style lighting, we're going to get to that. Quite a lot of them on the back half of that man's catalogue for sure. And then the last show I do is Where to Begin With. It's one where I pick a seasonal theme and then 10 movies that fall within that theme. We're currently looking at the overarching sci-fi horror. We've already done time travel. We're now doing man-created virus or outbreaks. And yeah, what I do is I review a movie, and then the following month we read out your reviews of that movie as I review the next movie, etc, etc. So all those shows contained in the T-Putz Collective. So please check them out if you haven't already. It is a great way to show support. This episode of Chronicle Podcast is written, recorded and produced by me for you. We will be returning with a new season in 2024. But before I go, please remember, I married my love in the springtime, but by summer he'd locked me away. He'd murdered me dead by the autumn, and by winter I was not but decay. This has been Chronicle Podcast, an almanac of old world horrors. Until the next time.
Ignition. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2.